Final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Chase McCabe along with Marquise Munson today. Darren McFarlane on vacation this week. And coming up at 1:30, we will talk to Will Gordon. And you might be saying, who's Will Gordon? Well, he's a Vanderbilt University golfer, a former Vanderbilt University golfer, now on the Pro Tour for the PGA, one of the few sports entities that is playing right now. They had a PGA tournament in Connecticut. Will Gordon, at 23 years old, finished third. He had an outstanding tournament. And so we'll check in with him at 1:30. We'll congratulate him and find out what's next. It's a great story because now he's going to be playing for the rest of the season for the most part with the sponsor exemptions and things like that. He has won his way in. So great story there.
Hey, Willie.
With some Vanderbilt ties.
Before we bring Adam in, I got a piece of breaking news that just wanted to throw this out there. NASCAR has just made a statement that concerns our city. With the uncertainty surrounding the coronavirus and the impact on the industry, this year's NASCAR's Champions Week and NASCAR Cup Series Awards, originally scheduled to take place in Nashville, will not occur. The 2020 NASCAR Cup Series, Xfinity Series, and Gander RV and Outdoor Truck Series champions will be celebrated at the end of the season with more details to come, but we look forward to returning to Nashville in 2021. So there you go.
Tough. So we got the news last night, of course. Got to wear the mask now. We're trying to get to phase four, but it's a battle right now, and it's still affecting the ability to have events like that. So, with that in mind, we bring in Adam Vingan. If you didn't pay attention, and it might have snuck in on you there, the draft lottery was Friday night. And something very interesting happened during the draft lottery. So we bring in Adam to tell us about it because he's written an article that I think a lot of teams now have become aware of because of the circumstances here. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing well, Adam.
We are soldiering on here, moving forward here. So hopefully counting down to on ice, on field, on court action here sooner. We're a day closer than we were, regardless of what happens here. But so, Adam, tell people what happened on Friday night, if they weren't paying attention, because it's very complex on why and the format that they came up with this. But when they drew all the ping-pong balls, tell people what the result was.
All right, I'll do the best I can to explain this because it even confused me as I was watching it. So as you mentioned, Willie, the NHL held its draft lottery on Friday evening. And as most people know, the NHL is planning to return later this summer, a 24-team format. So seven teams did not qualify for the quote-unquote Stanley Cup playoffs. So those seven teams were entered into the draft lottery, as well as the eight teams that lose in the qualifying round of this tournament. The Predators are one of the 16 teams included in the qualifying round playing the Arizona Coyotes. So as they drew the ping pong balls, placeholder Team E, that's what it was called, Team E, which had a 2.5% chance of securing the number one pick in the NHL draft, won the draft lottery. So what that means is that one of the eight teams that loses in the qualifying rounds of the postseason tournament will win the number one pick in the draft. Each of those eight teams will have a 12.5% chance of obtaining the number one pick. So it is possible that if the Predators were to lose to the Arizona Coyotes in that qualifying round best of five series that's scheduled for sometime this summer, they could have the number one pick in the draft for the first time ever.
That was very well said. And so the bottom line is this would be a consolation prize for the eight losers in that qualifying round. I don't know if are they officially calling these playoff games for the record, Adam? I don't think that they are, right? Like you have to win this to make the playoffs.
I don't think they are. I can't confirm that, but I don't think they are because I believe those eight losing teams in the qualifying round are considered non-playoff teams, which is why they will be included in the running for the number one pick. So I that would suggest to me that the quote-unquote Stanley Cup playoffs do not start until after the qualifying round, and they start with the first round.
That's how I understand it as well, which is interesting because, like, where do you put the stats for these games in these best-of-five series? They're not regular season games. They're not playoff games. So in the hockey register, where you put these, they're going to have to go somewhere.
Right.
So it's like its own separate category. But the net result that comes out of this is if the Predators lose to the Coyotes in this 3 out of 5, it'll be a bummer because they don't advance to the playoffs and get a chance to win the Stanley Cup. But the consolation prize is they would have a realistic shot of getting the first overall pick. The first overall pick, you know, not somewhere between 1 and 8, the number one pick, which, you know, most years, that's somebody who, you know, has a pretty good shot of being a big-time impact player. Now, it's only 12.5%, but at the same time, because you're in there with the other 7 teams that lose in this 3 out of 5. So it's not like you got it. It's not like it's an 80% chance, but 12.5 is a legit shot.
It is, and the Predators have only – I was actually intrigued by this when I looked it up. The Predators have actually – only picked in the top 10 of the NHL draft 7 times in their history. And the last time they picked in the top 10 was when they selected Seth Jones at number 4 in 2013. Now, of course, the Predators have been a playoff team for the past 6 years, so they're not in the running for the top spot because they're a regular Stanley Cup contender or have been a regular Stanley Cup contender. So they haven't been bad enough to grab one of these, you know, elite-level prospects at the top of the draft. But now, this is an opportunity for a team that, quite frankly, if they were to lose to the Arizona Coyotes and somehow find a way to get the winning lottery draw, you know, and presumably draft Alex Lafreniere, you know, he is a back-to-back CHL Player of the Year. The last player to do that was Sidney Crosby. We know how that's turned out in the NHL for Sidney Crosby. But when you think about this team, you think about the fact that in NHL terms, they're aging. You know, Dante Fabbra was the only everyday player on the roster this season under the age of 25, as well as the only one signed to an entry-level contract. You know, adding an 18-year-old foundational piece, you know, would be great for this team. But that was the point of my article when it was released today on The Athletic. You know, in the aftermath of the draft lottery, it hasn't just been the Predators fan base. It's also been the other 15 fan bases in the qualifying round. Are discussing, is it worth it to, you know, to watch my favorite team or root against my favorite team, you know, advancing in the playoffs or the tournament if it means having even the slightest chance of drafting an elite prospect? And I was surprised by the number of Predators fans, because, of course, that's the fan base that I most pay attention to, who would be willing to sacrifice another shot at a Stanley Cup this season with this group if it meant even the slightest possibility that Alexis Lafreniere could be on the Predators starting next season. I think it's an interesting debate.
First, let's talk about this Lafreniere. Is he absolutely the number one pick? And where does he fall in the category ranging from, you know, prodigy like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby or somebody like that, as opposed to other guys who are first overall picks who are very good players but aren't that, you know, franchise-changing kind of guy?
Right. So, as I mentioned, Lafreniere had 112 points in 52 games in the Quebec Major Junior League this year, and my colleague at The Athletic, Craig Custance, wrote a story the other day where he actually took, I think, the last 10 number one picks in the draft and had 10 executives basically, redraft the last 10 top number one picks. And I think Lafreniere came in at number 5. That means that the most recent 10 number one picks, which includes Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and I believe Aaron Ekblad and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and players of that ilk, Lafreniere came in at number 5. So, you know, is he a McDavid-like prodigy generational talent? No, but he is a very good player. He's the most NHL-ready player in this draft, according to experts, and, you know, certainly the Predators would not mind having him on their left wing for many years to come if that were to happen. But, of course, their number one priority, as it has been for the last several years, is winning the Stanley Cup.
So with that in mind, I think the answer is obvious. You know that you play to win, And if the odds were, you know, if you knew you had a 75% chance of getting it, that might sway me a little bit. But 12.5, they're still in, you know, what does that leave? 87.5% chance that you don't get the first pick. Right. And you're going to be picking in the middle of the first round or whatever the number ends up being. So I think, to me, the way I look at it, Adam, is it's a nice fallback. It'll soften the blow if they lose the 3 out of 5 to the Coyotes, which absolutely could happen. It's a coin flip, just like just about all those series will be when they're played, because everybody's starting fresh and you know all of those circumstances. So it might not have the sting if they come away unsuccessful in that series. But I think once they drop the puck, that's the last thing anybody's going to be thinking about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And look, the NHL, you know, part of the league might like the fact that a placeholder team won the draft lottery because it facilitates conversations just like the one we're having right now in the markets that are participating in the qualifying round. At the same time, the flip side of that is I'm sure the league's intention was not to have those 16 fan bases talking about throwing those series in order to have a chance to have the number one pick. But it's certainly a great conversation starter, but I agree with you, Willie. If and when this tournament starts and the Predators drop the puck for game one against the Arizona Coyotes and wherever the heck they're going to play, whether it's Las Vegas or Edmonton or Toronto or Chicago or Los Angeles, you know, people are going to want them to win and have an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. So it's a great conversation starter for now and a great fallback plan, like you mentioned. I think as the games get closer, I think the opinions might change.
Has anyone checked on the Detroit Red Wings today, Adam, and how they feel?
I mean, they've had a rough go of it.
Or the Senators.
I feel like I watched Pierre Dorion, the general manager of the Ottawa Senators, do the Ask 31 podcast with Jeff Marek and Elliot Friedman, and he did his best, and I commend him for putting a smiling face on the fact that they ended up with the 3rd and 5th picks when they could have had number 1 and 2, or I think 1 and 3, or whatever. But yeah, it certainly stings for the Red Wings, who had one of the worst seasons ever in the salary cap era, if not the worst, certainly up there, and ended up with the 4th pick when they had the best odds, I believe, of getting the number 1 pick. So, you know, I think the Red Wings have slid in the draft each of the last couple years, so they haven't had the best lottery luck. But yeah, to have a season like they did, I think they won 17 games, and to not have the number 1 pick, it certainly should hurt that fan base.
Adam, as we talk about some prospects here, Philip Tomasino, Igor Afanasyev are two names that Preds fans may have heard during their short time in the organization. But do you have any type of thought of when we might actually see them? I mean, is there a chance that Tomasino, the first pick last year by the Predators, that he could potentially make this team in the next year or two?
I think it's possible, quite frankly, that Philip Tomasino could be on the Predators' taxi squad for the upcoming postseason tournament. Now, that doesn't mean he'll play in the game, but I would not be surprised if Philip Tomasino was among the black aces, so to speak, for the Predators in the playoffs or whatever you want to call them. But his stated goal is to make the team next season, and he had a fabulous season in the Ontario League. He had 100 points. He was the 4th leading scorer in the league. You know, certainly makes the Predators look good for finding him at number 24 in the draft last year, but it sort of goes back to what we were talking about with Lafreniere. You know, the Predators, as we know, especially because of the coronavirus pandemic, the salary cap is going to be greatly affected. You know, the Predators are a team that spends close to the cap, and they don't have very many cheap entry-level contributors on their roster. As I mentioned, Dante Fabro, the only player, everyday player for the team this year that was signed to an entry-level contract. So the more players like that you can have in your lineup, whether it's Elie Tolvanen or Philip Tomasino or Rem Pitlick, for example, the better it's going to be for the Predators financially. So, I mean, I think Tomasino, you know, could get some experience with the team this summer, just being around the group as an extra. But certainly I think, you know, if he were to make the team out of training camp, that would be great. Of course, because of his age, if he does not make the team out of training camp, he has to return to junior. He can't play in the American League. So that certainly throws a wrench in those plans. He can't play for the Milwaukee Admirals. But, you know, certainly Tomasino showed in the Ontario League this season that he has a very bright future.
Yeah, and you kind of hit on something that I was going to bring up with you of, are we at a point where, you know, it not necessarily going into a, and you got to play the playoffs. You never know what's going to happen with the Predators this year. But is it at a point where, as David Poile looks at the roster and not necessarily hits the reset button, but maybe tweaks some things, and it's more towards those younger players and those contracts based on what you just brought up of some of the deals that he's given out over the last few years? And we know that Philip Forsberg is going to be up again in a few years. Mattias Ekholm, I mean, those are some staple players that he's going to want to keep. So it might make sense to try and lean on some of this younger talent.
Right. Like, for example, we know that the Predators' top pending unrestricted free agents are Mikael Granlund and Craig Smith. Now, the math would suggest that it's unlikely that both of them are able to be re-signed. So just for the sake of this conversation, let's say it's Mikael Granlund who enters free agency and leaves. He had a cap hit of $5.75 million. Now, you know, Elie Tolvanen has not blown anybody away in the American League, but I know he's well thought of within the organization, and they praise him for his willingness to be coached. You know, going from a $5.75 million cap hit to a, you know, $925,000 or $900,000 or whichever it is for Elie Tolvanen, I mean, that makes a huge difference. I mean, I know that Mikael Granlund is a much more established performer and producer than Elie Tolvanen, but those are the things that winning teams need to do, is they need to find those difference makers who are able to come onto a team and play well, you know, for a little money. I mean, look at Dante Fabro, for example, you know, effectively replacing P.K. Subban. Of course, not actually replacing P.K. Subban, but getting a lot of those top 4 minutes. You look at the third defensive pairing, for example, Yannick Weber, Dan Hamhuis, Corbinian Holzer, all pending unrestricted free agents. You know, now it's time for someone like Alex Carrier, you know, to have an opportunity to play on the third pair. I mean, the Predators are, you know, they are one of the oldest teams in the league on average. And that is skewed somewhat by the fact that they have a, you know, a 37-year-old goaltender and a 36-year-old defenseman. But, you know, it doesn't change the fact that most of their core players are on the are leaving their prime versus entering it. So, you know, sooner rather than later, they're going to need players like Tomasino, Tolvanen, Afanasyev, et cetera, to enter the league and make a difference.
Give us one last thought, Adam. The other part of the equation, I'm envisioning, you know, I know the focus right now is just to get through this tournament, find a way to crown a champion. Hopefully it's compelling and goes off without having to stop or anything nightmarish like that. So let's say that they're able to do that. The off season is going to be very, very interesting because they have to assess what the salary cap is. They're going to take theoretically a couple of months off, but that's really not that long of an off season to try to sign free agents. I'm just wondering, from the standpoint of a Craig Smith or a Mikael Granlund or any other unrestricted free agent, what that does to their thinking in terms of how you go about it. Do you sign another one-year deal? You're probably not going to get the lucrative 4 or 5 year contract that you otherwise might have gotten.
No, and that's a good point. You know, I think that's something that a lot of these pending unrestricted free agents are going to have to grapple with. You know, the number one pending unrestricted free agent in the NHL this summer, if I'm not mistaken, is Taylor Hall. Now, if you're Taylor Hall, do you take a one-year deal with, you know, the Arizona Coyotes or another team and try your luck with an 82-game season in terms of, you know, boosting your value even more? Or, you know, I think a lot of those free agents are going to have to grapple with that. One other thing that I think might be interesting, I think we saw it in the NBA. Now, his name escapes me, unfortunately, but there is a player for the Washington Wizards who is a pending free agent who has decided to opt out of returning to play, you know, in order to save himself for free agency, in order to give himself the best earning potential. And I'm not sure NHL players would do the same, but I think it would be interesting if there were any pending unrestricted free agents in the NHL who decided to sit this one out in order to protect themselves leading into free agency. But, you know, it is going to be very different because we know that, you know, under normal circumstances, we'd be looking at free agency in 2 days. July 1st.
Yeah.
And you know, now we're looking at free agency potentially on Halloween, October 31st. So, you know, it makes for a very interesting summer for sure.
Yeah, and just from the Predators' end, I just wonder, you know, what the thinking is from David Poile, et cetera, because of all of what you just laid out of, is there a chance I could get somewhat of a bargain or at least a one-year extension, so to speak, on a Craig Smith and or a Mikhail Granlund? Can you squeeze it in there if you don't have to make the long-term commitment? These are all things that we'll have plenty of time to discuss down the road that we're just setting the table for now. Adam, thanks a lot. Great stuff as always, and we'll check in with you again here very soon.
All right. Before the end of the show, make sure you ask Marquise about our NBA 2K online series.
Oh, yeah. I was actually going to bring that up, how that's going. I've heard it's been
well, Marquise
heated.
Also can name you the guy on the Wizards.
It's Davis, but his not last name is like Bartons or Burtons. Davis Burtons.
Yeah.
He's a forward.
I couldn't remember his name or how to pronounce it.
But, yeah, that's the player. And, yeah, the series is tied 2-1, Adam. Close games, though.
Yes, two games decided by 1 point and one game decided in overtime.
Competitive nature. That's all about. And it's the Grizzlies versus the Pelicans. So I got the Grizzlies, so I got to represent.
Well, thanks, Adam. Appreciate the time.
All right, guys, thanks.
Adam Vingan of The Athletic. And there's a statement the NHL actually just put out there. We'll tell you what it says when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you, along with Chase McCabe. Darren McFarlane is off this week. Marquise Munson hanging out with Chase back at the studio today. It's great to have a couple of guys. Marquise has a little company over there. As I promised you earlier, there was a big story over the weekend. I know right now we're just craving all kinds of competition. The PGA Tour is back, even without the galleries. They've been playing a few tournaments here, and a great story came out of this past weekend up in Cromwell, Connecticut, at the Travelers Championship. You may have watched it, and you may not have even known that there was a Nashville connection here. Will Gordon is a former golfer at Vanderbilt. He's a former SEC Player of the Year on Vanderbilt's fine men's program, the men's and women's golf programs at Vanderbilt. Outstanding success over the last several years. Will Gordon fired a 64 yesterday and ends up in a tie for third. So an outstanding performance. And he joins us here on the show. Will, congratulations on the performance, and thanks a lot for spending a few minutes with us today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Yeah, it was an awesome weekend. And like you said, it's great that golf's back. And we're really excited about last weekend and trying to build on that momentum moving forward.
Boy, I can imagine. So what has the last 24 hours been like? It must be a complete whirlwind with a lot of people paying attention to you that maybe are just getting to know you.
Yeah, I think, the last, ever since I kind of took the lead on Friday afternoon, it's been crazy. I mean, my phone's been blowing up, and I'm super appreciative of everybody that's been reaching out with some positive messages and support. I was just, super, super pleased with myself, how I was able to hang in there yesterday on a kind of the weekend competing with some of the best players in the world.
Well, it's funny. We talk to a lot of people, whether it be, a player comes up from Milwaukee trying to make the Predators and stick in the National Hockey League, or somebody that's playing in the minor leagues in baseball gets the call up and is trying to stick in there. I know it's extremely competitive to make it on the PGA Tour, especially at your age, at the age of 23. So tell people, Will, what this means for you, this kind of finish in terms of the points you get and how this allows you to keep playing at that level.
Yeah, I mean, so I've been lucky enough to have some starts this year on the PGA Tour. So this is my seventh start this season. And just through accruing some points, and this week kind of pushed me over the edge of some pretty big benchmarks and got me special temporary membership for the rest of the year. So any tournaments have available, I can play in as many as I get invited to the rest of the year. And projection-wise, it looks like I have a pretty good chance of securing my PGA Tour card for next year. So it was a big week, and it just means so much for me and my team, because it's not just me. It's there's 10, 15 people that are really putting everything they got into this operation. So we're super excited, and it's just been a lot of hard work in these last 3-4 months with so much uncertainty. It's just the timing's unbelievable.
Yeah, just maneuvering through this whole period of time and getting yourself ready. You've been rewarded for, I guess, how you stayed sharp during the time that, you know, nobody was playing professionally. So take us through that time and how you tried to mentally stay focused and physically stay focused.
Yeah, I think, right when this all happened, I had a couple tournaments, lined up for, but they obviously got canceled because of COVID. And, it was a big letdown at first. I think, I had some really long and hard conversations with some of my team and kind of just realized, just like life in general, nobody's going to feel sorry for you, and you got to go take what you want. And so that's kind of what I kind of rallied around mentally and really had the time over the last 3 months to kind of change some things that, normally you wouldn't have that downtime to kind of work on some technical things, fundamentals that I just, usually you're playing year round, you don't have that downtime. So, it was a blessing in disguise. And, we've done a really awesome job of getting everything moving in the same direction from my trainer to my swing coach to the mental side of the game. And, everything's just moving in the same direction. And everybody who was kind of involved knew that something like this was coming, and it's just nice to have.
Well, you had a great tournament overall, but it had to be a highlight for you, and I'm sure it was a challenge mentally for you when you get paired with Phil Mickelson, a legend of the game that I'm sure as you grew up and you were learning golf, I mean, he's a household name that we've been watching for a long time. So what was that like when you learned that you were going to be playing with him?
Yeah, I think when I mean, obviously it's a dream come true to play with a guy you've looked up to your entire life. But yeah, it was, he was super nice, and, we knew some people in common. So he was, super, super friendly and super encouraging. And, we didn't do a ton of talking out there, but, it was cool to see him work and see some of the shots he hit that he's famous for hitting. It was good to be around, but I think I handled it okay. It was a lot of noise, I think, going on. And, I've never been in that position, but I hung in there nicely, and I was able to bounce back Sunday and really take advantage of the opportunity.
Will Gordon is with us, professional golfer, finished third yesterday in the Travelers. And obviously the big conversation that we've been having for the last few months, Will, is everything going on with coronavirus and the health and safety. And I know that there have been some golfers that pulled out and have tested positive and are caddies testing positive. But when you went through the entire process this past weekend of the health and safety stuff, what was that like, and how did you feel going through it?
Yeah, I think, we're on the way, me and my caddy right now are on the way to Detroit. So like the first thing we'll do when we get there is get tested. And so last week we got tested Monday, and we were able to go practice, but we were not allowed to go inside. Now that's changed this week. So we will get tested, and then we can go to the hotel, but we can't go on anywhere on property. So we'll wait for our test results to get back. And I think last week I was really impressed with how the tour handled it. There was so many very practical ways to keep players safe, and all the food was pre-packaged. So you just went up and had a choice, and instead of like a buffet style, how it usually is, stuff like that. Everybody was wearing their mask. I seemed that everybody was keeping their distance and being very aware. And I think that's very current with the times, because we have to be sensitive to the fact that, this thing is very dangerous. And, I think it's just everybody's becoming more and more aware of what they can do to stop the spread of it. So I think, I was just super impressed with how, Jay Monahan and the commissioner of the PGA Tour and the rest of the tour handled it. And everybody wants to play is the important thing to remember. Everybody doesn't want the tour to stop. So I think that's what's keeping everybody motivated to keep practicing these good guidelines.
Yeah, and I think what we've seen too is, and this is something that we've discussed about all these sports returning, whether it's your sport or NASCAR or baseball, hockey, what have you, that's coming up in a few weeks, that just because there could be one set of guidelines when everything starts, things are going to change. You're going to adapt. You're going to learn as you go. And I think that we've seen that, especially with the PGA Tour, of they got everybody back and now they've adjusted some of the rules. But I think that that's a positive, and hopefully it continues to grow as we move forward.
Yeah, I think, I mean, exactly like you said, it's just the new normal. And, I mean, people are adjusting to it pretty quickly. So I think the more people embrace that and are open to these ideas and strategies people have to kind of combat the virus, I think it's everybody wants to play. So, and when that's everybody's motivation, I think everybody realizes they have to do their part. And I've been really encouraged to be around so many guys doing their part to combat the virus and stay safe. It's just weird. It's so weird. Like, you know, your entire life, you shake hands after you play and give each other fist bumps after good shots, and all that's going away. But it's stuff we have to do, and it's not a big sacrifice for the bigger picture.
So forgive the ignorance for this question. I listened to you talk about, you know, what kind of your next steps of getting your tour card. But with major championships, how does that apply what you have now? How does that apply to major championships, or does it?
Yeah, so this year, they usually have U.S. Open qualifying, but obviously because of COVID, things are just changing. But this year, the British Open got canceled and the Masters was postponed. So the Masters field for November is already set. But to get into any of those, I think my world ranking moved up to, I think, 190. Now, so if I continue to climb that, and once you get around that 50, top 50 in the world number, you start getting into major championships, and obviously the U.S. Open, you have an opportunity to qualify next year. But yeah, I think just like I've kind of handled this process since I've graduated, just good golf takes care of everything, and I just got to continue to focus on doing my job and let the rest take care of itself.
Will Gordon is with us, former SEC Player of the Year at Vanderbilt, coming off a third-place finish up in Connecticut on the PGA Tour. So tell us a little bit about your Vanderbilt experience, Will. It's been, as we mentioned before, a really good program over the last few years, and obviously the SEC is stacked top to bottom. So just the battles that you had throughout your career as a Commodore, how did that prepare you for this moment?
Yeah, I think, one thing out of high school I wanted to do was I wanted to go play in the best tournaments against the best players, and Vanderbilt was an unbelievable – it's also, I mean, obviously a great school and an unbelievable city. So Vanderbilt kind of has it all, and Coach Limbaugh does an unbelievable – encouraging to become the best people and players we can be. But, yeah, like you said, playing against those players throughout college, I mean, yesterday I played with John Rahm, and I remember my freshman year of college, I came in third or fourth, and John won a tournament. We played together, and I was like, dang, I mean, just being able to compare yourself against somebody like that, you know, 2 months into college is such a big advantage when you're playing a schedule like Vanderbilt does. The environment was unbelievable. We had so many good players, Matthias Schwab, John Augenstein, Patrick Martin, Theo Humphrey, I could go on. There's just so many good guys, and guys we talk with each other, you know, 3-4 times a week, just encouraging each other, asking each other how to get better. And when you have a type of environment like that with a whole bunch of dudes who are secure in themselves and secure in their goals, you're able to learn from each other and grow. So I think that's just the most important part of why Vanderbilt was such a huge beneficial step for me.
Well, last thing before we let you go, you grew up in Davidson, North Carolina, which is not a huge town, but of course an awesome school there in Davidson. You happened to be growing up when a pretty big sports icon was playing basketball there. So tell us about your connection with Steph Curry.
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, so my family was a host family for several Davidson basketball players when I was growing up. So I idolized those guys. And when I was like 10 to 12, Steph was coming through college, and we had just shared that similar interest of golf, and I was pretty good for my age, and so Steph and I used to go play all the time, and we probably played 9 or 10, 12 times, something like that. And he's just been super encouraging. He's continued to reach out through college, and the last, as I've turned pro, he'll text me and just tell me that he's watching and that he's encouraged. And was, he sent me a nice message this week, and it's just really nice of him to be at the top of his profession and take the time out of his day to encourage me. And he's been a huge inspiration for me. So it's been cool to see him reach the pinnacle of his career, and something that inspires me.
Man, that's pretty amazing. So how good is he on the golf course? He's pretty good, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's real good. He beat me the last time we played when I was probably in 8th or 9th grade, and he had asked to tee it up again. So I think he just wanted to get in the win column and then get out of there. So he's a heck of a player, but I wouldn't put anything past that guy with his work ethic. So it'd be interesting to see if he had a full time to dedicate to golf, what would happen. But he's a special person.
Man, that is pretty awesome. Will, congratulations on your achievement over the weekend. Best of luck going forward here in this whirlwind, and thanks a lot for spending a few minutes with us today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, that's Will Gordon, former Commodore, coming off a great weekend on the PGA Tour, and buddy with Steph Curry. How cool
that's
was that?
Cool.
We'll come back, and we will have the final segment. We've got a lot to get to. We'll sort of process what we just heard there from Will and move forward. Stay tuned. This is Darren, Donick, and Chase here on 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, it is Darren, Donick, and Chase, but just Donick and Chase this week, as Darren is on vacation. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Marquise Munson hanging out. Good to be back at the Game Nashville studios, the Wholesale Inc. studios powered by RumbleOn.com. And Willie, good stuff with Will Gordon. What a cool story, and somebody, yet another person we can cheer for, not only as a Vandy guy, but just a Nashville guy. To try and get his PGA Tour card, and I think showings like yesterday will definitely help that.
Well, what an experience, huh? I mean,
you
get to play with Phil Mickelson. You shoot a 64 on the last day. You actually led the tournament at one point, I think, on Friday. You could tell this is a guy that has a lot of confidence, right? It's the first time I've ever spoken to him, but you know, he just has that, you can tell, he just seems to believe that he belongs there. He wasn't like, oh, golly, gee, I can't believe I just did this. It's like he's been envisioning this. And I guess when you grow up and you get to know Steph Curry a little bit, probably gives you a little bit of confidence. That's a cool connection, huh?
Yeah, that's awesome, getting to know him. But a cool story by Will Gordon. So a couple of news and notes to pass along as we wrap things up on a Monday. So the NHL, Willie, they've released a statement on COVID-19 testing results. They say, quote, as of Monday, June 29th, the NHL has had in excess of 250 players report to club training/practice facilities for optional participation in phase two activities. There have been in excess of 1,450 COVID-19 tests administered to this group of players. Those tests have resulted in a total of 15 players returning confirmed positive tests for COVID-19. In addition, since June the 8th, which was the opening of Phase 2, the league is aware of 11 additional players who have tested positive for COVID-19 outside of the Phase 2 protocol. All players who have tested positive have been self-isolated and are following CDC and Health Canada protocols. The NHL will continue to provide regular updates on the number of tests administered to players and the results of those tests, end quote. So when you hear the numbers and you hear how many tests and how many players, and then that it's only 15 players that have been confirmed since then, and then there were 11 before, you go, okay, well, that's not that bad. But you also think there will probably be more as this thing goes along.
You know, the thing that we discussed a lot with Elliot the last couple of times he's been on, I think they knew realistically when you had people all around the globe, you know, coming back, that there would be some positive tests, especially at this stage. Same thing with baseball. But I think, sorry, I had to sneeze there. Don't have the cough button at the home studio here. But I think I think they've believed that if they can get through this process, quarantine the people that have contracted the virus, have them go through the guidelines, if you can get everybody in that bubble at the two host cities, and we still haven't been revealed who those cities are, right? Because they're still working through, I think, some details there. But I think if they feel like they can get people on that campus and get started, then I think you got a reasonable shot of finishing if you can keep it there. Baseball, I think, has more challenges. You heard Kurt Casale talking about it with us, being able to travel city to city, you know, plane ride to plane ride. You know, those are all X factors that make it more challenging to avoid, you know, other people picking up the virus. And hockey and basketball will not, and Major League Soccer, right? The Nashville SC is heading down to Orlando on Wednesday to start that process there. So if you can get there and get started, I think those leagues will have an easier time finishing. I think baseball will be a constant challenge to try to get through what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I guess, I don't know if you saw the news today, but Diamondbacks pitcher Mike Leake is the first known player to opt out of the 2020 MLB season. He is going to sit out the 60-game season amid the pandemic and is the first one to announce that. We knew, and that's been a part of the conversation with not just baseball or hockey, but any sport, and we've seen it in the NBA, that there are several that are just going to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable, I just don't think this is the right move, so I'm going to sit this one out. I believe that Mike Leake will not be the only one of Major League Baseball that says that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I do look forward to seeing you know, the decisions people made. The NBA has had some guys, we mentioned one of them earlier, that they've got their reasons why they want to do this. That's part of it, right? It's completely understandable if that's the decision you want to make, and I think those teams have got to honor that. So we're all you know, wondering how many will actually do it. It takes courage to be the first guy, I would imagine, right?
Sure. Yeah, because you know that you're always going to have those people that go, yeah, well, the D-backs, they're young, they may not be that good. I mean, Mike Leake, let's be honest, he's not, you know, what does he have? And so you're going to have those naysayers that go, oh, they just don't want to play. They just don't want to come back for 60 games. And, okay, think that way if you want. But I do believe that there's some legitimacy to somebody having concerns about this virus, the unknowns. I just read a piece that Fox 17 tweeted out that there are people volunteering to be infected with it so they can speed up the process of trying to find a vaccine. That just shows you how serious this is. Of trying to figure this thing out. So I'm not going to fault anybody if they say, hey, I don't feel safe. I'm going to have to back out of this. And so I'm not going to hate on Mike Leake. I understand. And he's not going to be the only one probably in baseball. And I'm sure there'll be some hockey players and you just kind of move forward. I mean, you can't hate on anybody for trying to be safe.
No question. But in perspective, right, just going back to the NHL, 15 confirmed positive tests for 1,450 tests, that's pretty good, right? Because when you first say, well, 15 people, wow, 15 people. 15 people is significant, but 15 out of 1,450 tests is a pretty low percentage. And so, you know, the key is to continue to move forward and make sure those 15 people don't infect another 15 or 30 or 45 people, right? That's going to be the key. There will be a few people that pop up. The key is to not let it spread within your group, because that's when you're going to run into big problems.
Yep, and that's just what everyone is trying to prevent. Another thing that we mentioned briefly before Adam Vinion came on, NASCAR issued a statement about the awards banquet that was scheduled for Nashville, to come back to Nashville this year at the end of the NASCAR season. That is now not going to happen due to the coronavirus, but they did say that they have plans to bring it back in 2021. So you can tell that They are very happy with Nashville and what happened last year. We know a race is coming out, but it's yet another event that we're seeing either changed or postponed or however you want to put it. But NASCAR is going to have some sort of recognition for their champions, but it just won't be in Nashville like we saw last year. And that's a shame, but I'm glad that 2021 is on the table and they're bringing it then.
Yes, it'll be good to have it back when hopefully things are more routine and people can enjoy the downtown and all that goes with it. It was such a big success last year. We had so much fun interviewing all those guys. Another thing that we covered today, Chase, was the signing of Cam Newton by the Patriots. Jimmy Shapiro did not take very long to put out some new odds on how Cam Newton joining the Patriots changed their odds. Their Super Bowl odds went from 28-1 to 25-1. So not drastic change.
Okay.
But, 25-1, that shows that even without Cam Newton, you know, they were not completely off the radar, right? They have the over-under for Cam Newton's games that he will start for the Patriots in this season. Take a guess what it is.
Number of games that, is it over? It's an over-under? Is that what you said?
Over-under.
I would say 10.
Marquise, do you think it's over or under 10?
I'll say it's over.
It's actually only 8.5. Can you believe that?
I would take over.
Does that surprise you? I would have thought more like you guys, at least 10.5. But they go 8.5, so they're not that confident that he'll be the starter every week. The MVP odds for Cam Newton went from 100-1 to 40-1. The Patriots' division odds are now tied with the Bills. So they were below the Bills from 17-10, now at 13-10 to win the AFC East, which they've won every year as long as we can remember.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes sense that they're tied with them now. But that's going to do it. That's going to do it for us. We will be back at it again tomorrow. Chris Bussard at 10:15. He had to reschedule from today, so we will talk to him. Stick around. Jared and the GM. That's next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.